Well, good evening. Good to be sharing with you tonight. I must admit, this has been recorded a week or so in advance, but I am convinced that what I share with you tonight will still be true in about 9 to 10 days' time. We've been working our way through the amazing book of Romans. It's quite an intimidating book in some respects because it contains such deep truths, but it also sits within quite a profound context. And so tonight is no exception, and particularly tonight, I'm going to be covering three chapters of Romans. And I want to acknowledge that the pace that we've been going through Romans has varied. Sometimes we focus on just a small section. Other times we kind of rush through a number of chapters. And actually, as we continue this series from this point on, we're going to be really slowing the pace down and just doing a couple of verses at a time. But the reason we do that is because sometimes there are sections of this letter that actually all just flow together. In fact, you can't kind of treat them separately because they're all part of one ongoing narrative or point that Paul is trying to make to his audience. And certainly tonight that is the case. And so while I recognize I won't pick up on everything tonight, there is this really significant theme that runs through these chapters 9 through 11. And I hope that by engaging with this text, I can equip you with some tools to do some even more investigation yourself as you engage with this text. So before I head into the text itself or some various parts that we're going to explore, I want to tell you about this tree. For those of you who know me, I really enjoy gardening. I enjoy getting there and pruning and seeing kind of fruit and flowers foster. And recently, my latest addition to the backyard was what is called a fruit salad tree. Now, this is not a paid promotion. This just happens to be what we got. There was only room for one more kind of tree in our backyard. We had an orange and we had a mandarin, and there was one more spot, and we didn't know what to get. And so what I discovered was you could get these wonderful grafted trees where you'd have one branch with one type of fruit and one branch with another type of fruit. In fact, you could get up to 5 different fruits grafted onto the same tree. Now, we didn't have space for 5, but we thought it would be great to try out this nectarine and plum combination. And you can see it there on the screen. And as I planted it, I couldn't help but notice, as I watched to see whether it would take and thrive, that one side was really fruiting and thriving, where the other side was less so. You could see these green, beautiful leaves emerging from the nectar inside and these flowers that were blossoming. Meanwhile, for a really long time on the plum side, it just looked dead. You know, maybe there was little signs of life, but nothing like was occurring on the other side. And I know I'm not really an extreme empath. I don't like to kind of give too many emotions, you know, to inanimate objects. But nevertheless, I couldn't help but feel like the plum was kind of sad to see the nectarine thriving so well. I mean, seriously, how does it feel when the other side flourishes and yet you feel like you're not? And this is really significant, particularly when it comes to the book of Romans and these two groups that existed in Rome. And I just want to go over this one more time. I know we've covered it many times before. There were two groups in Rome. There was the Jewish believers group who were faithfully following the 613 Torah laws. They had this deep knowledge of the Old Testament or the Tanakh, and they had this physical marker of being circumcised, that they had this allegiance to God physically. Then you had this other group who were the Gentile believers, and they weren't following the Torah laws, right? They had a limited knowledge of the Old Testament, and they were uncircumcised. And they'd come to know Christ and then to appreciate his grace. And for a time, rather than the Jewish group being in control, they had been kicked out of Rome. And therefore, these new Gentile believers had emerged and were running church, you could say, a different kind of way. And so there was conflict that emerged between these two groups when the Jewish group returned. Who was in charge? Who was considered righteous? How can these guys be doing these things when we are the ones who have been following the rules for all this time? And this is what Paul is speaking to. And this is what he wants to ensure these groups understand that they each have a part to play in God's story. So let's just turn here to Romans chapter 9, verses 1 to 5. In fact, we're going to start here at verse 2. He says, "My heart is filled with bitter sorrow and unending grief for my people, the Jewish brothers and sisters." So that Jewish group. "I would be willing to be forever cursed, cut off from Christ, if that would save them. They are the people of Israel, chosen to be God's adopted children. God revealed his glory to them. He made covenants with them and gave them his law," picking up on all those characteristics that I mentioned earlier. "He gave them the privilege of worshiping him and receiving his wonderful promises. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are their ancestors, and Christ himself was an Israelite as far as human nature was concerned." And so there can be no doubt that Paul has a deep, deep love for the Jewish group. Through them, this faith journey is possible. And he wants to make this really, really clear. It's because of their story that what is actually happening now, even though it looks like one side, the Gentile side, is flourishing and the Jewish group doesn't seem to be so, it's actually because of the Jewish group that this has been possible. And yet with all this history, right, God revealing his glory and this privilege of worshiping him and the covenants, the state of play isn't what it ought to be. A little bit further on, he notes, "The Gentiles who did not pursue righteousness have obtained it, a righteousness that is by faith, but the people of Israel who pursued the law as the way of righteousness have not attained their goal." And so here you get back to that illustration of the grafted tree. There's two groups here. And one group, the Gentiles who did not pursue righteousness, are thriving and flourishing. They're experiencing God's grace. And yet the people of Israel, who pursued the law as a way of righteousness, are not flourishing to that same degree. And not only are they not flourishing to that same degree, they're being critiqued for it. And so you've got to, again, feel for that Jewish group. It's like, they're doing so well, and look at us. And now you're kind of, also these previous chapters and this part of this letter, you've been critiquing us for not getting it. And I kid you not, as I was preparing this message, I was sitting in Stump's Cafe, and as I was thinking about that feeling, right, of that Jewish group versus that Gentile group, them flourishing and us not, the song, "What About Me," came up on the sound system at Stump's Cafe. It was just hilarious timing. And those lyrics, you know, "What about me" by Moving Pictures, "What about me? It isn't fair. I've had enough, now I want my share." These were the lyrics that were resonating through Stump's Cafe, and I was thinking, that's what this group must have been feeling. Like, what about us? It's all well and good that these Gentiles are thriving, but what about us? And this is what Paul is responding to. Because some on that Jewish group might argue that it was God's fault that the Gentiles are what they are and the Jewish group are what they are. And Paul will respond to that in Romans chapter 9, verses 6 to 29, which we can't cover tonight. But to both groups, the Jewish group and the Gentile group, Paul has a message through these chapters. And that is, firstly, no, God's plan has not failed. Just because this is what things look like right now, it does not mean God's plan has failed. And secondly, no, this Jewish group, this one that right now doesn't look like it's producing fruit, was not chosen and then disposed of and rejected. And this is really important to that group who's feeling that, what about me? You are not chosen for a time and then just rejected so that other people could experience God. That's not what is going on here. But Paul instead investigates what went wrong. What has God always been doing that sometimes we can miss? Because there is a danger that as followers of Jesus, there is a risk that history will be repeated again. And while for most of us here sitting in the congregation, we place ourselves squarely in that Gentile camp, those ones who were flourishing in contrast to that Jewish group, there was always the risk that at some point the shoe will be on the other foot. that somehow we will have missed the point only to see some other group thriving and us declaring, well, what about me? So let's engage with the challenge. Romans chapter 10, verses 1 to 4. What went wrong? Dear brothers and sisters, the longing of my heart and my prayer to God is for the people of Israel to be saved. So Paul is like, I want this other branch to flourish. I know what enthusiasm they have for God, but it is misdirected zeal. We're going to come back to that. For they don't understand God's way of making people right with himself. Refusing to accept God's way, they cling to their own way of getting right with God by trying to keep the law. For Christ has already accomplished the purpose for which the law was given. As a result, all who believe in him are made right with God. So we got a couple of things here that I just want to pick up on. First of all, there was something going on in this whole like one side thriving, the other side not thriving situation, which is to do with the fact that this Jewish group had missed the bigger picture. And that actually comes back to this idea of who God is. He continues, Moses writes this about the righteousness that is by the law. The person who does these things will live by them. But righteousness that is by faith says, the word is near you, it is in your mouth and in your heart. And so there's a sense in which it's like this Jewish group had become so focused on the law that they lost the heart of the law, which was the invitation to trust God. That was always God's invitation, the invitation to trust him. That justification, that is being right in his eyes, was not by works, and that has always been the case. It's always been the case that justification in God's eyes was not by works. The invitation and that kind of the big perspective where they'd twisted God into somebody that he wasn't was to fail to trust in his mercy and trust in his forgiveness. Or perhaps even not be aware of the limitations of what it means to be human. And so they'd chosen righteousness by works rather than righteousness by faith. And what righteousness by works was not actually going to produce the trust that God had created and called them to experience. And so with this in mind, we hear these familiar words from Romans 10, 9 to 10. If you openly declare that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is by believing in your heart that you are made right with God. And it is by openly declaring your faith that you are saved. Now, I want to recognize that some Christians have kind of turned this kind of phrase here, or this little bit of scripture, into this kind of ticket to heaven statement. And we're going to come back to why that can be dangerous for us. But that's not what Paul intended here, okay? He is providing to his Jewish group, who he loves so deeply, he would be willing to be cut off from Christ for them. He is providing to this Jewish group a contrasting image to what they had been living out with misdirected zeal. This is going to be such an important phrase. The zeal, the fervor, the passion was there, but it was misdirected. And what he wants to point out to this group that he deeply, deeply loves, who are standing back and saying, but what about us? Has God forgotten us? Was this God's fault? All this kind of thing. He points out to them their misdirected zeal, that they had obeyed God. They had obeyed God, but they didn't trust God. They obeyed God, but they didn't trust God. And I can't help but think of a sermon now a couple of weeks ago there in Jonah chapter 4, where at the end of the day, Jonah obeyed God. He did what he was instructed to do eventually, but he didn't actually trust God. He didn't trust in his character. He didn't trust in his perspective. And this same scenario is being played out here. And Paul makes this case that they obeyed God, but they didn't trust him, referring to the Old Testament, which again, they were familiar with at the time. He refers to Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 14, and then Isaiah 28, 16, and Joel 2, 32. He makes this case by referring back to these scriptures that they were familiar with. We're going to pick up here as we transition into that Joel 2:32 phrase. He says, "For everyone, quote, who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved." And so he's quoting these prophets and these psalmists and Torah to point out to this Jewish group, who are the ones who knew it, that this was always God's agenda to invite them to trust, not just invite them to obey. And so we here see how he pivots to this second section where their zeal had gone askew. Everyone who calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved. But how can they call on him to save unless they believe in him? And how can they believe in him if they have never heard about him? And how can they hear about him unless someone tells them? And how will anyone go and tell them without being sent? This, or that, is why the scriptures say, "How beautiful are the feet of the messengers who bring good news." Again, referring to Isaiah 52:7. So in one respect, this Jewish group had missed the bigger picture as to who God was, the God who just wanted them to trust. And to a second extent, they'd missed the bigger picture about who they were called to be. You see, here it makes it really clear that their role was to be messengers. They would be the people who would bring good news to everyone, and that people would delight in the beauty of this message. They'd missed this perspective because God's intention wasn't just to have a special people. It's like, these are my special people. And he will call them special, and they were chosen, don't get me wrong. But his broader intention, his intention from the beginning, was not just to have some sort of special party, right? His actual intention was to not just choose a people, but to commission a people to tell the world who he is. Let me say that again. Not just to choose a people, but to commission a people, the Israelites, to tell the world, everyone, who he is. Israel were the sent ones. And so this is, again, where Paul points out to this Jewish group, again, who he loves. I cannot make that clear. This isn't just a slamming on the Jewish group. He loves them so deeply, but he doesn't want them to miss the bigger picture as to why one side is thriving and yet they are not. And that's because they had misdirected zeal in a second way. You see, they embraced their status as special, as a special group, but not as a sent group. So they embraced their identity and their status as special. We are special. We are chosen, but not the commission to be those who are sent. And again, if we go back to that Romans 10 kind of passage, some Christians have turned this passage here into their own commission. You know, how can they call on him to save them unless they believe? And how can they believe if they've never heard? And how can they hear unless someone tells them? And Christians have turned this into their commission, which is great, as long as they heed the same warning that Paul follows with to the Jewish group. And that's here in Romans 10:15b. He quotes, "It is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news." So that's a good thing. Verse 16, "But not all the Israelites accepted the good news. For Isaiah says, Lord, who has believed our message?" This is really, really important for us to understand. Not just for the Jewish group in Rome who are reading this in the presence of the Gentile group and feeling the pain and the what about me, but for us as followers of Jesus, we need to hear this. "But not all the Israelites accepted the good news." Not all who were commissioned to bring the good news had accepted the good news. not all those people who had been commissioned to bring the good news to everyone had accepted the good news. And that should be a challenge to us too, and a warning to us too. Because it is one thing to know the good news. It's even another thing to share the good news. But do we actually accept it for ourselves? Because acceptance isn't just some sort of intellectual affirmation. It's actually true ownership. Not just obedience, but trust. And there's that challenge sometimes, maybe a bit like that misdirected zeal, numbers 1 and 2, the first one. Do we ever obey but not trust God? And misdirected zeal, number 2, do we ever take delight in being saved but forget that we have been sent? See, these aren't just challenges for the Jewish group, even though they most definitely were. These are challenges for us. Do I trust, not just obey? Do I understand that I'm sent and not just special? As followers of Jesus, we too need to understand these things, lest we end up having misdirected zeal. As we shift into chapter 11, we see that Paul then gives instruction to both groups. I want you to, for a moment, to imagine them in the same room with all this tension, each hearing not only the message for them, but the message for the other. Maybe one group's feeling a little arrogant. The other group's feeling a little despairing and critiqued. Maybe some of Paul's words have started to resonate with that followers of Jesus Jewish group. They started to see, maybe God hasn't given up on us. Maybe it isn't God's fault. Maybe it is that we just missed the point a little bit. And so with those two groups in the same room listening to each other, note these words. In Romans 11, verse 1, it says, I ask then, has God rejected his own people, the nation of Israel? Of course not. This is Paul speaking, myself am an Israelite, a descendant of Abraham and a member of the tribe of Benjamin. No, God has not rejected his own people, whom he chose from the very beginning. Do you realize what the scriptures say about this? Elijah the prophet complained to God about the people of Israel and said, Lord, they have killed your prophets and torn down your altars. I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too. And do you remember God's reply? He said, no, I have 7,000 others who have never bowed down to Baal. And so Paul directs a message in light of these previous two chapters to this Jewish group, and he says, God has not rejected you. I know right now it's looking like they're thriving and you are not, but God has not rejected you. In fact, be reminded of Elijah and just check your perspective. Elijah said, I'm the only one left, and God's like, no, I've got 7,000 others. What Paul wants to encourage the Jewish group with is this isn't over. It's not over. It is not over. And then he shifts his attention to the Gentile group, who no doubt were listening in, loving the fact that again, maybe the Jewish group was being pointed out for their failures. And he says this in verse 13 to 18. I am talking to you, Gentiles. Inasmuch as I am the apostle to the Gentiles, I take pride in my ministry, in the hope that I may somehow arouse my own people to envy and save some of them. If some of the branches, that is, some of the people of Israel, have been broken off, and you, though a wild olive shoot, have been grafted in among the others and now share in the nourishing sap from the olive root, do not consider yourself to be superior to those other branches. If you do, consider this: you do not support the root, but the root supports you. And so, just in case this Gentile group were getting all arrogant about their fruit and their flourishing, he says, hang on a second, be grateful, because you have been grafted into this. The root, all that history, all that stuff I was just trying to point out to the Jewish group. And yes, they've returned to Rome and they're not happy because you've taken control and now there's conflict within the church. But be reminded, the root supports you. You need this deep, rich foundation. This is not about remaking Israel, but it is about honoring their critical role in God's redemptive story in the world. So again, there's something quite humbling for us to consider the way that we too, as Gentiles, have been grafted into a bigger story. And while Paul laments that many of his brothers and sisters, his fellow Israelites, Jewish people, had misdirected zeal, we too ought to be reminded to trust, not just obey, and to not just be chosen, but to be those who are commissioned. And this is why the end of chapter 11 ends with hope. It says here in Romans 11:24, if you were cut out of an olive tree that is wild by nature, and contrary to nature were grafted into a cultivated olive tree, how much more readily will these Jewish group, the natural branches, be grafted into their own olive tree? You see, Paul wants to point out that the story isn't over. It's not over for the Gentile group. There is a risk. It's not over for the Jewish group, followers of Jesus. He wants to see them thrive. But we all need to be reminded to trust. And we all need to be reminded that we are sent. If we can do that together, just like my fruit salad tree, Paul's hope was that that Jewish group, passionate followers of Jesus, would also bear much fruit too. Let's pray. Jesus, we want to thank you that we are part of a bigger story. And while we went rapid fire over these chapters in Romans, thank you that it is a fantastic reminder not to get arrogant about our place. Help us not to get arrogant and say, like, well, you're done with that Jewish group, without recognizing the deep, rich foundation on which our faith and understanding of who you are is built. And God, may we not fall into the trap of misdirected zeal. May we choose to trust, not just to obey. God, while we delight in our chosenness, may we not become complacent, but rather would we take up that mantle and be those people who show the world what you are like. Because Jew or Gentile, this is your plan. And it always has been. So challenge us, we pray. May we see your kingdom come and your will be done. And may we as a church not allow differences to divide us. But may we know you. Amen.